Welcome to the Every Breath Counts podcast. I'm Ryan Shekel, health enthusiast, amateur ultra runner, and award-winning business consultant. And each week I interview experts and leaders about their stories and strategies on how to optimize your mind, your body, your career, and your life so that you can make every breath count. Thank you for investing your time in the show and yourself. Now let's get started. Albert Einstein said, "In the middle of every difficulty lies opportunity." And Roy Bennett said, "Your hardest times often lead to the greatest moments of your life. Keep going. Tough situations build strong people in the end." Today's guest is Trinnell Walker. Trinnell was a Texas high school football superstar before a fluke play left him paralyzed from the neck down at the age of 14. As a quadriplegic, Trinnell battled depression and questioned the point of life. But years later, he's accepted that he had to go through his experience to give hope to others that are experiencing difficulty in their own lives. He wrote the book, The Trinnell Effect, to empower others to change their attitude about life for the better. If you're going through a dark time or looking for strategies to push past adversity, this episode is for you. And if this is your first time here, welcome and thank you for tuning in. Be sure to click the subscribe button to stay up to date with all the latest episodes. And if you found this episode inspiring, educational, or even just entertaining, I would be grateful if you gave us a 5-star rating wherever you listen and tag me on Instagram at Every Breath Counts Podcast with any feedback. Get ready to be inspired with Trinnell Walker. Trinnell Walker, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure.
Well, it's a privilege to have you on, and I know a little bit about your story, and I'm so excited to share it with my listeners. But you were a Texas high school football standout at a really early age, which is rare in this Friday Night Lights kind of life we have now. So what was your childhood like growing up in Texas as this football phenom?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say I was always a football phenom. Dang, I can't even say it. Phenom. Or maybe I was and really didn't know it. But growing up, you know, in a single parent home, you know, my mom worked all the time and I had my older brother, Artez, who was 8 years older than me. And so football was his favorite sport. And sports, especially football, was one of those things that kept us out of a lot of trouble. Because if we wasn't playing football in the house, we was playing football outside in the yard. And if we wasn't playing football outside in the yard, we was playing it over our friends' houses. So that was like one of those things that, hey, you walking down the street one day and you got a football in your hand, you see some kids and, hey, let's play football rather than let's go out there and get, you know, in trouble. So football actually became my favorite sport. And, you know, I always had a natural talent in being fast. And I was always a quick learner. And so my brother, at a very young age, was able to develop, you know, what he seen in me. And he taught me a philosophy of go hard or go home. Meaning when he said go hard, it means simply do my best. Or you might as well go home and do nothing at all. So every time that I stepped on the football field, I was doing my best. Every time I stepped on the track, I was doing my best. Every time I stepped in the classroom, you know, to do my work, I was doing my best. So all of these things, you know, even working out with my brother and just doing push-up, doing a Herschel Walker workout, doing push-ups at an early age, it caused me to be stronger and faster. And so my whole big goal in life, knowing that my mom wouldn't be able to pay for college, she was working 3 jobs to make sure my brother and I, along with my grandmother, who also had a disability, was taken care of. So I'm like, man, I'm going to use my athletic talents along with my education, because that's something she always stressed, was getting your education. And so I was like, okay, I'm getting my education. I'm going to use my athletic talent to, first off, get on the high school varsity football team as a freshman. Then I'm going to use that to get a full scholarship to be able to pay for college and then achieve my ultimate goal of going to the NFL to be able to make enough money where I can buy my mom a house, a car, and to be able to retire her to say, thank you, mom, for all the sacrifices you've done for us.
That's so great. So this motto that your brother taught you of go hard, in a way, I feel like it's so much more meaningful when you're growing up and maybe you feel like you're at a disadvantage already. Like maybe life dealt you a poor hand to start, right? Like you've got a single mom working three jobs. You got an older brother I've got a brother, and the older brother being faster, stronger, not necessarily more athletic, but just older, that makes it that much harder for the younger brother to compete. Maybe you don't have the resources at home to compete in the classroom. So this go hard mentality is so, so powerful. So where did this go hard mentality get you, like up until your high school years?
It actually got me to be able to perform well in everything I did, you know, because it let me recognize that I had a choice. Even at an early age, I have a choice. And I want to share this game. My brother and I played in our house whenever we weren't able to go outside or we just had something to do. It was called Up the Middle. And this is where the implementation of the go hard or go home, you know, really took effect. Again, I was 6 years old. You know, my brother was 14 years old. My brother, a lot bigger than me. He actually played the nose tackle on the defensive line when he was in middle school and high school.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so me, I'm just that little bitty, you know, small running back. And I'm like, so basically we would be in our room. He would set pillows or shoes, whatever we had, at least 6 feet apart from each other. Those represented the out-of-bounds markers on the football field. And he would get in between them on his knees, representing the defense. And he would give, and I would be the running back, representing the offense. And he would toss me a sock or shoe, whatever we had to resemble a football. And I'm telling you, it was like David versus Goliath. And you already know how that story turned out. So I remember he, on the first try, I was like maybe several feet away from him because he wanted me to get a running start. And he told me, he said, if you run outside of these pillows, you got to start over because you're out of bounds. He said, you can't stop playing this game until you score a touchdown. And I was like, okay. So the first time he was like, don't, said, hut. And so I took off and I was going to use my speed to try to get around him because I was fast. That was a mistake because when I got close to him and I tried to run around him, he pushed me so hard. And remind you, we were in our room. So there's not much that's around except a wall. So he pushed me so hard, I flew into the wall. Boom. Left like this big indention in it. And I'm so glad that my mom never did come to our room much, because if she did, I wouldn't be alive to tell this story right now. But anyway, I peeled myself off the wall and I looked at him just mad. He was like, you mad? Good. Do it again. So I went back to my original spot. And this time, man, I had been watching like Tony Dorsett, Herschel Walker, you know, all those good running backs. So I'm like, man, I'm going to run him over. I'm going to knock him down on his back and go in. So again, I ran toward him as fast as I could. That was a mistake, because he grabbed me and he pushed me so hard backwards that I ended up doing the backwards flips I didn't even know I could do. I got up off the ground with tears rolling down my face out of frustration. My body hurt from hitting the ground, and I actually got smart. I ran toward him as fast as I could. This time he lunged at me. I jumped at the last minute, diving over his head. He hit my feet, causing me to flip in the air. I landed on my back, ball in hand. Touchdown, game over. This game also taught me to never quit, no matter how hard it gets, which is the end and what I now know as the Trunnell effect, the never quit. And it also taught me the E in the Trunnell effect, evaluation, that when things happen in life, they may not work out originally how you want them to. Therefore, you're going to have to take a step back, evaluate the situation, and try different options in order to achieve your goal.
Yeah, let's talk about this for a second, because you had the ultimate evaluation in your life. And I can't imagine as a 14-year-old going through what you went through. But you were on the varsity team, I believe it was, and correct me if I'm wrong on that. As a 14-year-old Texas high schooler on the varsity football team.
Yeah.
Stud. Grew up with your brother teaching you football and, never quit mentality. And then now you're throwing this curveball that no parent ever wants to have happen to their kids. No kid ever wants to have happen to them. But tell me about that football game when you were 14 years old.
All right. I'm just going to give you a little background of, just my dimensions and my size at that time. I was 6 foot 1. I was 6 foot 1, 185 pounds. I ran a 4.5 seconds in the 40-yard dash. I bench pressed and power cleaned 215. Mm. I squatted 315, and I deadlifted 425. So as I look back on it, I was like, "Wow, I was a stud." But that night, I'll never forget it. It was on October 20th, 1995. The lights, we were playing a home game, and the lights from Bearcat Stadium shined down on the field, capturing my performance. The cold October breeze nipped at my skin as I took my position on the left side of the defense, because I was actually starting for the first time at the defensive back position. And so as I moved, took my position on the left side, I remember looking in at the quarterback, waiting for him to receive the ball. He received the ball and immediately tossed it to the running back headed in my direction. Man, I read that play like a book. I rushed upfield, and the running back saw me and tried to reverse field before before I tackled him, but he slipped. And I made a textbook tackle from behind, hitting the running back, wrapping him up, and driving him toward the ground. Little did I know was my teammate was coming from the opposite side to assist me. The running back saw him, but I didn't, so he ducked underneath. And when he ducked underneath, it exposed my head, the top of my helmet, and my teammate missed the running back and hit me instead at the crown of my helmet, the very top, crushing the fourth vertebrae in my neck, shattering it like a piece of glass, leaving me paralyzed immediately on the field. And it's interesting that when I think about it, while I was laying on the field, I was paralyzed in the feeling. No feeling at all. And my initial feeling was nothing. And then as I was laying there on the left side that I made, that's still in the position that I made the tackle, I could feel like my soul like curling up into a fetal position, despite being physically on the left side. And fear took over my body and just started squeezing me like a boa constrictor squeezing its prey. It was real overwhelming. And I remember my brother, coming over and down to the field and asking, you know, what's wrong? And I told him, I think I broke my back, because I thought if I broke my neck, I would instantly be paralyzed. I mean, I would be dead. Mm. Then I remember my brother actually, you know, just really concerned all on his face. And then they rolled me on my back and put me on a gurney. And it felt like my arms and legs were straight up in the air. And it was weird. And so they immediately took me to the local hospital, where I remember looking up at my mom. I was like, what is that noise? She said that they're cutting their pads off of you. And I was like, oh. I said, am I paralyzed? And she nodded her head, yes. And I just told her to pray for me.
Man, that's I can't imagine at that age getting that news.
Yeah.
From your mom. What was kind of going through your head at that time when you are now coming to this realization that your entire life at the age of 14 has changed?
At that time, it was nothing but fear and uncertainty. I was scared. I mean, that's the only thing I can say was I was scared.
I mean, this go hard or go home mentality, this never give up mentality. Did you feel at that time like you were just going to give up?
Oh yeah, definitely. Felt that I was going to be like, hey, just don't want to throw in the towel. But one of the things about the go hard and go home mentality, and I'm grateful for the people for that. And I think it really came into effect unknowingly when I was in the ICU. My heart stopped, not once, not twice, but three times, and my lungs collapsed. And the doctor didn't know if I was going to live or die. And so not only was that go hard or go home philosophy just ingrained in me, but also my mom's faith. Because when the doctors told her that, she actually went to a little room and actually had a conversation with God saying, hey, he's my son, but he's your child. If you see fit to take him, go ahead and take him, but give me the strength. He said, but if you see fit for him to live, I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure he's taken care of. And she did that. And hey, he answered her prayers, and I'm here today. So the faith, still that mentality, even after, you know, I was able to come back and be in the land of the living, still going hard despite the situation.
Yeah. So there's this quote that I love, and it's something that I've thought about quite a bit. And I can't remember exactly who said it, but it goes, when life can no longer threaten you with death, what else is there to fear? And I know that you had fear. Like, there was fear, obviously, as you're going through this, but there's something about being threatened with death and not succumbing to it that I feel is so powerful when you transcend that particular stage in your life. Because, you know, you're quadriplegic now. You're paralyzed from the shoulders down, but you didn't die. Yeah. I'm curious to know, like, how long did it take to start to shift your mindset from this fear, from this wanting to give up? maybe depression, I don't know. Like, what was it that helped you flip that switch and say, you know what, this is not my future. I've got to buckle down and do things differently.
Oh, man, it has been a process. And for the first 2 and 3 years, I would say, of my injury, I had PTSD, meaning that every time around October 20th, I would start replaying it over and over again. And for those three, not only during that time, but for those 3 years, I was crying myself to sleep every night. And I was actually put trash bag over my windows because I used to like to sleep a lot. And the reason I enjoy sleeping because I was dreaming. And when I was in my dreams, I was still up moving around, hanging out with friends, playing football and chasing the ladies. But the moment my eyes opened up, the nightmare occurred. I'm paralyzed. And, you know, growing up in the church, I actually, you know, was mad at God during this whole time. And my mom always encouraged me to pray. And I wasn't trying to cure that because one moment I'm like, man, God, if you make me walk, you know, I'll worship you. Nothing happened. Then I'm like, okay, I grew up in church. I'm like, man, the devil, hey, you make me walk. Nothing happened. And so, again, around that 3-year mark, I was like, there's nothing else that I can do. And so I just finally did what my mom encouraged me to do. And this really began my shift in my thinking. And I remember I was 17. It was at nighttime, and I had tears rolling down my face. And I just asked Jesus to come into my life and have his way. And in doing so, I had this peace that overcame me that I cannot even explain. And I heard a tender voice say, Trinell, you put football before me. I don't want anything put before me, but through this injury, I'm inspired others that if they put me first and use their minds to the fullest, they can do anything. And so that right now let me know that my purpose was bigger than playing football, that I had a reason for why I'm here. But there wasn't an instant. It just helped me like, oh, okay, this helps make sense. But I end up having two more visions. The first vision was of me, was of the world spinning around on its axis as I was laying there. This is my dream, another dream that I had, spinning on its axis. And it's kind of surprised me, but I instantly understood that whether I throw a pity party or not, the world is going to keep turning. Therefore, I have a choice. And then that one faded away. And then I had another vision of a fish swimming upstream like a salmon to spawn. And the water flowing downstream represented the rest of the world, or what, you know, most of us that are disability like to call TABS, like yourself, temporarily able bodies. And others that you don't necessarily, you don't have to deal with disabilities, not saying you don't, but meaning that you don't have to be concerned about somebody feeding you, about somebody getting you dressed, and all the other activities of daily living. So me, I was the fish swimming upstream, recognizing that this life is going to be hard. But if I could just keep swimming like Dory told Nemo in Finding Nemo, just keep swimming, I will overcome those obstacles and continue to reach my goal. So those are the things that really helped me shift my mindset, recognize, hey, my purpose is bigger than what I thought it was. I have a choice in whether I'm going to throw a pity party or not. And that if I learn to take action, be resilient, encourage, never quit, evaluate, learn, and learn to learn and love myself. Oh, yeah, I'm going to make it through it along with the love and support of those that have been blessed to be around me.
That's an interesting idea. And the one thing that really resonates with me here is, you know, you kind of just laid out this Trinnell effect, right? It's the acronym for your name, and it's all these pillars that really help you get to where you're going. And it's the take action, it's the resilience, encourage, never quit, evaluate, learn, love. It's all of these different attributes. But without that purpose, it seems like they don't matter, right? Like, because if you're moving in a direction or no direction, then it doesn't matter if you don't quit, if you take action, because you don't know where you're going. Mm-hmm. So I understand that you had this purpose kind of come to you in a vision, but like, how can other people, how can, you know, a high schooler who's struggling to find himself right now, a recent college graduate that's entering the workforce that has no idea where they're going to find employment, a 50-year-old coming to retirement age that doesn't have the funds to retire, that just got laid off. I mean, where can someone find purpose in their life so that they know what direction to start taking action towards?
One of the things, there's a couple of things you can do. One of the things that you can add, well, a couple of things you can ask yourself is, first of all, find the silver lining of the situation, because that's what I had to do. And here's how you can find the silver lining in a situation. You ask yourself these two questions. First question is, what can I do in the next 2 weeks in my personal and professional life that can make things worse? No, not what. It's like, let me make sure I'm putting these questions. No, is there something I can do in my the next 2 weeks in my personal and professional life that would make things worse?
That would make things worse?
Yeah. The question is, yes. And you write down just those three things that makes things worse. And now I want you to ask yourself, is there anything that I can do in the next 2 weeks in my personal and professional life that will make things better? And then I want you to write down five of those things that you can do to make your life better. And by understanding what will make your life worse, you are aware of, hey, I don't even need to do these things. But when you look at what you need to do to make your life better, those five things, I mean, it can be as simple as, hey, man, I just need to get out of bed. If you're depressed, I just need to get out of bed and brush my teeth. You know, you don't have to live day by day. You just got to remember 1447 minute by minute, because that's how many minutes are in a day. Some people can't make it through that day. They may need to just make it to that next minute like I needed to. I just needed to make it to that next minute, which will also lead to the next step. But in doing what you can do to make your life better, then you're able to see the silver lining. Then you're able to get that little hope. And once you have hope, that gives you a little bit of optimism that, hey, my life is going to get better. And then you may be able to ask yourself this question. Why do I get up? Now that you got that, why do I get up every morning? What is my motivation for getting up every morning? Why do I go to this job? Why do I go to school? Why do I do these things? And usually when you ask that question, some people say, as far as a job, I want to provide for my family. You know, why do I want to go to school? Even though I don't like going to school, maybe I need to get just the education, you know, to be able to help me get to something bigger. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the something bigger is, but I know this is a process that I need to take to get to it. And like Mr. Ziegler said, you go as far as you can see. And once you get there, you'll be able to see even further. Again, just make it to the next minute, because your purpose may be in that next minute to be able to brush your teeth. And then once you get past that, you may be able to see a little further. You know, so it doesn't have to be a necessarily huge vision. Like, this is my purpose. Your purpose may be just be able to take care of your children that day. Your purpose may be just being able to get to school that day. You know, so your purpose may be in the present of that moment. And then once you get there, you may see something bigger, or somebody may come into your life and drop some knowledge or some nuggets that make you see not only yourself better, but able to see something bigger. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things that I've always thought is that if you're looking to grow personally, professionally, reach the pinnacle of success in your life, and maybe you're at a point in your life where, you know, you just feel like you're stuck. Maybe you just don't think that anything's going anywhere. Maybe things are going in the wrong direction. One of the things I've always thought is that you have to aggregate little nuggets of success, kind of like you're talking about, right? Like, you have to find in your life something that is a win. And I've always thought that starts in the morning, you know, getting up when your alarm clock goes off. That's a win. And it goes to what you're talking about. It goes to that minute by minute mentality. And if you can work from 1 minute as a win to the next, I think it's super powerful. It's almost like if you're running and you want to get tired, if you're running and you're trying to like win a race or do an endurance event or a sprint and you are tired, like all you have to focus on is the next step, like one step in front of the other, 1 foot in front of the other, 1 step, 1 second, 1 minute, and then you continue to move forward. I mean, is that something that you feel like you had to go through trying to aggregate successes as you worked your way towards becoming the motivational speaker you are, the successful author that you are? I mean, what do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, definitely have to go minute by minute to do so, because, again, sometimes that's all you can do is go there. And so that's what I have done. But the most powerful thing that I think I have been able to do to really help me really open up, be vulnerable, and let people see my authenticity, which people gravitate to, and which has helped me establish emotional connection, because emotional connection is the glue to relationships, is to be able to get in touch with my own emotions. Because one thing I've discovered as a guy, and from guys, period, we don't get in touch with those emotions. Those are signs of weakness. So we only allow ourselves to experience two emotions, anger and joy. Anything in between is weakness. And so I've, you know, shared with people, and I learned this from Lauren Mellon from her book, The Stress Overload, as well as her book, What's My Number? It's like when you are experiencing emotions, I want you to imagine this for a moment. Imagine that your emotions, you have a soda, like a pop with the twist top, and your emotions is the soda inside. And let's say something on the a family member or somebody, you know, aggravates you and like shakes that bottle up. You know, you got, you know, just shaking it up, and you're so aggravated inside. And what happens whenever you take the top off that bottle?
It
too quickly.
Yeah, it bubbles over.
Exactly. It tends to explode. And so when that happens in your life and you just untwist that top off your emotion, you explode all of those emotions on that person and your relationship, and it damages it. So let me ask you this. When you shake it up the same soda water and you don't take the top off, but you keep shaking it up, what ended up happening to it?
Well, then it loses the carbonation, right?
Yeah, it ended up getting flat.
Flat.
And there are times in our lives where we get to the point where I'm just not going to say anything about it because I don't want to, you know, if I say something, I'm going to blow up on somebody or somebody just don't understand what I'm going through. So I'm just going to keep it all inside. And when we do, we become flat. We lose all our emotional energy, all our life-giving energy, and end up becoming depressed.
So I love this, Trinell. I think that's a really cool reference because as you're explaining it, you know, you're talking about shaking this soda bottle and you're talking about, you know, popping the cap off and all of a sudden it explodes and fizzes over. And I was thinking in my head, I've got to ask Trinell at this point, like, well, you know, if you don't open it though, then nothing happens, right? Like it can go away. But I love that you thought about this and you said, yeah, it's flat. It's flat. It doesn't have the same zest. It doesn't have the same flavor. It doesn't give you the same experience when you open it and drink it. And I think that's so powerful because if you bottle in and you don't allow those emotions to come out, you're right. You become flat as an individual and people can't enjoy all of you. Like carbonation is why soda is so good. You know, it's the bubbles, it's the experience, it's the taste on your tongue, it's the popping and snapping as it goes down your throat. All of that is part of the reason that like an ice cold Coke is a glorious experience.
Yes.
So I love this. I love this. And it reminds me of something that that Jimmy V, famous college basketball coach, said. And he said that the perfect day, you will experience three emotions. You will laugh, and I'm probably going to get this wrong. You will laugh. You will cry, or it was like you'll be happy, you'll be sad, and you'll be moved to tears. It's something along there, and it's one of his famous speeches, and it's so true. Like there's something about being moved to tears, whether it's happy, whether it's sad, that like, it's so authentic. It's so raw. It's so powerful that people can really feel like they understand and know you so well. So I truly agree with this, Trinell, that you just cannot bottle up every single emotion you have. And as a man, I do feel like it's something that maybe we're predisposed to. I don't know if it's societal. I don't know if it's something that's in our genetics. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think it's a little bit of everything, but one of the things, the last thing that I would like to share with you with this analogy, which is, let's take the same soda that you're having and you have shaken it up. I mean, you have shaken it up, you shaken it up, shaken it up. And instead of blowing up, twisting the top off real quickly and blowing up, or not even taking the top off and becoming depressed, you just slowly twist the top off, letting a little bit out at a time. And then it bubbles up, and then you just let it fizz back down. And you take a little bit off at a time. It starts to bubble up, but then you let then it goes back down until you eventually are able to take that top off and being able to enjoy that soda. And that's one of the things that I learned with this next exercise that I call the 30 seconds. I just call it 30 seconds. I learned it from Lauren, 30 second steps. Basically, for the first 10 seconds, you take a deep breath and just feel that breath coming in and just let it out. That right there just releases the stress that you're going through. The next thing you can do is take another deep breath and then let it out. But this time, you know, put your shoulders back, put your chin up and put a smile on your face and watch how your attitude change. And I forgot who referred to it as a power pose, but that's like, man, you getting your power back. And the last 10 seconds is being able to take another deep breath, let it out. And being able to warmly observe yourself with compassion. For instance, you can be like, man, you are a phenomenal person. You're strong. You're patient. Everything's going to be all right. Therefore, you haven't stuffed them or blew up anyone. You have embraced your emotions. You have experienced your emotion, and now you have found a healthy way to express those emotions. And therefore, you're able to be a life-giving source, not only to yourself, but to others. And even when you're in the heat of the moment with someone and you can feel those emotions come up, you're like, hey, I need to take, I need to just take 30 seconds, or how about let us either agree to disagree, or I need to walk away for a minute and until, because I'm not feeling this right now, I'm not in a happy place, and what may come out my mouth next, it may hurt you and my feelings in this relationship. So let me take some time away. And then once I get my emotions under control, let's try to talk about this again.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You have gone through some adversity. And I think, you know, when you go through adversity the way you have, you can kind of harden your mind to create like a framework for overcoming that adversity. And I know that this is what your book, The Trinnell Effect, is all about, is helping other people overcome adversity as they're going through it. So, you know, what are the biggest three things that someone can do that is going through adversity in their life right now? What are the biggest three things that they can do to start to overcome that adversity and get on the right track?
Take action. Like in the Trinnell Effect, the first one is take action, because you may have to make a decision. Just like I said, with that silver lining, finding that silver lining will help you be able to identify areas that you're able to take action. And once you're able to take action, you're able to get that momentum to start going. And you told me to give you three. So I'm going to give you the three that I like. But okay, the whole Trinnell effect builds on each other to help you get there. But the beautiful thing about it is, it's a toolbox, so you can go to either one that you need to. Mm-hmm. Mine is the encourage. Encourage. Because you have to encourage in order to help one flourish. And so as I was going through my situation, the most important part, I discovered the most important person who's going to talk to me all day long is me. Mm-hmm. The story, the most important story that I'm going to hear is the story that I tell myself. So I got in the habit of telling myself this story when I wake up in the morning. I would go in the bathroom, look in my full-length mirror, and find something I like about myself. I would look into my eyes and say, ooh, I like those cocoa brown eyes. And then a smile would appear on my face, and I'd be like, you know, that smile right there? Yeah, that makes me smile. And then I was like, and I would have fun with it. I would bite my bottom lip and slowly let it go from my teeth and say, you are a sexy beast. And that if it was, and then if it's to be, it's up to me. And that would give me the motivation to never quit. It is impossible to stop a motivated person because they will never quit. And I'm going to give you a bonus one, which is the last L in the Trinnell effect, which is love. A wise man said, love thy neighbor as thyself. And I have to ask you all and your listener, can an empty water pitcher quench the thirst of a withering plant? How can you truly love and give the love that you desire if you really want to give if you don't even love yourself? And I encourage you to take time. It may mean to journal. It may mean to take a 30-minute a massage. It may mean, you know, go fishing or whatever it is you like to do for yourself so you can really get to know you. You can really enjoy yourself. Because like Lauryn Hill, the R&B singer said, the real you is more interesting than the fake somebody else. And once you have that love, now you're able to get that love that has been a gift from above to others.
It's not a real podcast until Lauryn Hill gets brought up. So I truly believe, though, I think you're right about this, Trinell. And I believe one of the things that I think is necessary for success, for growth, for anything is to build a strong foundation. And I've thought about this a lot because I think that before you start working outwardly, you need to work inwardly. And I think that's a lot of what you're getting to with this self-love, inner talk, motivation towards yourself, encouragement. And you're right about this. The narrative you tell yourself is the narrative you're going to live in. Mm-hmm. If you tell yourself a horror story, if you paint yourself to yourself as a failure, well, then you're going to live within that story. Yeah. And I think it's really cool that you were having these dreams for 3 years where you saw yourself running and playing and flirting with the girls, because I think it really goes to show that, like, deep down inside, you still saw yourself as that person. And I think you can use that as part of your narrative to say, like, yeah, like, I'm a great person for these reasons. This is why I can be successful. Maybe it's your beautiful cocoa eyes. Maybe mm-hmm. it's a skill you have. But you have to continuously perpetuate that positive narrative in your mind. And the self-talk is so, so important for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm telling you, you have to talk to yourself. So, yeah, definitely have to do that. And that's one of the things I'm on the phone. Sorry about that. I got people coming in and interrupting. You can tell this is live podcast. I'm telling you, talking to myself, but not only speaking about it, you got to be about it. And that's what I share with everyone, you know, that I talk to. You can speak about it all day long, but until you learn to do that, take action, how are you going to actually be resilient? And how are you actually going to really be able to motivate yourself with encouragement that's going to give you the strength to never quit? To the point to where you might say, hey, I need to pump my brakes and evaluate my life to make sure I'm according to my why and I'm living the best life that I'm living. And then learning the lessons from that to be able to take the next step to get to where you want to go and being able to love yourself in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think a lot of people need, you know, a mentor or a role model to kind of help them get to where they want to go. And one of the things that I've always found really beneficial is finding someone that really inspires you. They may be where you want to be at one point. They may just be saying all the things that you want to hear. But who inspires you, Trinell?
First and foremost, honestly, is my mom and my brother. Because, you know, my mom, a single parent mother, raising two young men, being able to make sure she's doing the best she can, you know, and her faith and her hard work. And then my brother, again, taking a role of that positive male role model in my life, as well as, you know, his life, us both, you know, dad's not involved in our life. And then being able to meet a plethora of people, but one is Sil Flores. I mean, the guy that helped me get into college and actually being able to speak to his class, giving me an outlet to be able to speak. And then hearing, you know, I wanted to go to college and give me opportunity to go to the University of North Texas. As well as, again, Mr. Zig Ziglar, which is a story behind that, where I wanted to see it be his protege in 2004 in college when I first heard it. Fast forward to 2009, met a high school friend who said, I said, man, I want to be his protege. And he was like, man, I know Zig Ziglar. And I'm like, what? And so getting the opportunity to speak to his organization, him looking at me saying, you're going to inspire more people than I have, write a book. And then his son, Tom Ziglar, taking me under his wings and being able to just pour in me and share with me. So there's a lot, but
that's a lot of inspiration. What advice would you give to 13-year-old Trinell before your injury?
Man, that's a good question. My advice to him was like, regardless of whatever it is, you are unstoppable. You are unstoppable. Believe this to be true. You're valuable and successful in all that you do. And I would have him to keep repeating that till he believed that. So he know if something like this happened, even when he wake up in the morning feeling depressed, he's like, man, I'm unstoppable. I'm unstoppable. I believe this to be true. I'm valuable and successful in all that I do. I'm unstoppable.
I love that. Here's a question for you that I think is really relevant now with all the head trauma going on with football, given your past and your injury. I mean, what are your feelings about the dangers of football for kids now? Do the benefits outweigh them?
Honestly, I believe it is scary. Because I get asked this question all the time with, I don't want my son to play football because of what happened to you. And I tell them, don't let your fears kill their dreams. My mom was scared for my brother and I to play the game. But she knew we loved the game, so she didn't allow her fears to kill our dreams. And that would be my advice, is to make sure they have proper techniques. Make sure whoever the coach is in, make sure they teaching them the fundamentals, the basics, make sure they have proper techniques, and just support them. And don't allow your dreams to kill. I mean, don't allow your fears to kill their dreams.
Man, that's a great outlook. That's a great outlook on that. Trinell, you are a powerful man. I cannot wait to get my hands on your book, The Trinell Effect. And I think you're an inspiration. I think that, you know, whenever you see somebody that is constantly moving forward in the face of overwhelming adversity, it's an inspiration. And I think that's what you are. And it's a lesson that everyone needs to hear and see. Because look, it's like you said in your one vision, the world is going to keep spinning whether you want it to or not. If you are going to lay in bed all day and be depressed, you have the choice to do that. That is your choice. But understand, the world is not going to stop for you. It's not. And you have the choice to get up. And that's a good choice, and you have the choice to move forward. And it may feel overwhelming at times. Mm-hmm. And it may feel like that's not something you want to do. But I encourage you to look to someone like Trinell Walker and see that there still can be joy, there still can be success, and you can make the most of the situation you're given. And you are an example of that, Trinell.
Well, I appreciate that. And thank you. I mean, appreciate you having me on here to be able to share the story. And if it's okay, I just want to share with your viewers where they can actually go see a free documentary.
That was my next question. How can people get a hold of you? How can they see your documentary? How can they find your book? And then I got three questions that I like to end every podcast with.
Okay, well, you can always go watch the documentary at walkerbeyondlimits.com. Again, that's walkerbeyondlimits.com. You can also go get the book, The Trinell Effect, at triumphbeyondlimits.com. com as well. And you can, you know, or you can also get it on Amazon. It's on Amazon as well. But, you know, I prefer you to go to the website so you can learn more about me and more about what I do. And you can follow me on Facebook at TriumphBeyondLimits.com. I mean, not .com, but on Triumph Beyond Limits on there. And on Instagram, Triumph Beyond Limits.
Awesome. Awesome. Three final questions that I ask at the end of every single podcast. So you wrote a book, The Trunell Effect. What's the most impactful book you've ever read?
Honestly, I would say the Bible, once I really got the understanding of it. But more importantly, Zig Ziglar's See You at the Top. I've read other ones that I can say, but those two have really influenced my life to the point where I'm like, okay, I got order.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said something about the Bible though that I want to follow up on, because you put that little caveat in there. So you said, once I understood it, what was it about it that made you understand it, or where were you kind of getting hung up? What do you mean by that?
It's funny because when I used to read the Bible, my mom would say, I'm like, I don't understand this book. And she was like, have you ever asked God for the understanding of his word? And I was like, no. So when I started asking that question, I started getting more of an insight of it. But more importantly, when I started reading different translations of it, and it kept it real simple. I was still getting the understanding. Instead of saying the King James Version, thou art, stuff like that, I'm like, I don't know what to say. I wasn't born back then. I started getting other translations. And more importantly, I started meditating. But I actually started asking, hey, you got to make sense to me, because I hear what you're saying, but I need to see it out in the world. And once I started doing that, I'm like, okay, start getting better understanding. And it was real simple then. But when I'm like, I'm from Missouri, even though I ain't, I'm like, you got to show me. And so once I started doing that, and then I actually having little mentors, asking them, you know, what does this mean? Because it doesn't make sense to me, you know?
Yeah, it really goes to the mentality of there are no stupid questions. And, you know, you hear that said a bunch of different ways, and there'll be people that are like, well, some questions. But ultimately, if you don't understand something, ask, right? Mm-hmm. And someone knows. Why would you sit back and just pretend you know, or why would you ignore anything if someone has an answer, right? Like, yeah. I think it's, you need to put your ego aside, you need to ask the questions, and then you'll learn. And I think it's a great lesson. Yeah, it's a great lesson as well. So it sounds like you did meet one of your idols in Zig Ziglar, but if you could have a drink with anyone, past or present, who would it be? What would you drink and why?
Whoa. I already know. 'Cause again, I got two. But I read this interesting passage in the Bible that I've been reading it. And it says that before I formed you in your mother's womb, I knew you. And it was like every day of your life was already laid out. Every moment was already before you even thought of. And so I'm like, all right, God, Jesus, I need to have a talk with you. I'm like, you know, we can drink some wine. I mean, because I know, Jesus, you turn water into wine. So whether if I have water or wine, it's going to be a good time. I'm like, but I got some questions I need to ask you. I'm like, man, you didn't see my injury coming before it was coming. I'm like, man, why? I mean, I want to know the real deal. I wanted the NFL career. I wanted to be able to deal with the financial. I mean, I'm like, come on, you got to give me the answers that I don't know. So, yeah, that was me running to my deep.
What do you think Jesus would say if you had him for a drink of water/wine and you said, Jesus, you knew this injury was coming. Why?
I think he would say, And I never thought about it. Besides, I knew you could have, I had a purpose for you. I wanted you to see the truth. Because with your athleticism, you would have thought it was all you. But I wanted you to see the truth. I wanted you to get the experience of what the truth is. More, not only the truth of what I've shared in my word, but the true you and how you have been able to tap into that persevering side of yourself. Now others are able to be inspired and breathe life into. Now their life is better based off of what you've gone through. You got to go through in order to get to. You got to turn a test into a testimony, and you got to make your mess your message.
That's so powerful. I love that so much. And the last question, the Every Breath Counts podcast is all about gratitude. It's about achieving success. It's about optimizing your mind, your body, your career, your life. So what advice do you have for someone that wants to make the most of their life? What can they do on a daily basis to make it happen?
Again, find that silver lining and take one. Then remember 1447. I learned this from my mentor, Sil Flores. You just have to go minute by minute toward, as you take in that silver lining, just go minute by minute. And like Mr. Ziegler said, go as far as you can see until you get there so you can see any farther. So those are the three things: finding that silver lining, going minute by minute toward that silver lining. And once you get there, you will be able to see even further. And you are unstoppable.
Chanel Walker, thank you so much for being on the podcast. You're an inspiration. Guys, go out, watch the documentary, get his book, Be Unstoppable, and make every breath. Hey, y'all, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. I can't articulate how grateful I am for you. If this episode was inspiring, motivating, or educational, it would mean the world to me if you hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you listen and left a positive 5-star review. And if you want to learn about new episodes as they come out, check out my Instagram at Every Breath Counts Podcast and sign up for my newsletter at everybreathcountspodcast.com. Have a great day and make every breath count.